This is Rick Telberg, and this is a CPA Trendlines podcast.
Hi, I'm Liz Gold with CPA Trendlines, and today's guest is Katie Maxson-Landis, founder of Moxie Accounting in Portland, Oregon. Before we launch in, let me tell you a little bit about Katie. So Katie Maxson-Landis received her certified public accountant credential in 2011 after working in the salt mines of public accounting for 7 years as an auditor and staff accountant and as a bookkeeper for 10 years before that. She's loyal, generous, interested in advancing the application of accounting for the cannabis industry to a gold standard, and we're going to talk about that today. Katie received BAs in both technical theater and English literature in 1993 from Hastings College in Hastings, Nebraska. She then enjoyed several years of eclectic careers in food service, speaking loudly, and bartending. She owned an electrical contracting business, worked in currency conversion software support for the rollout of the euro, coordinated an alternative drug court in Multnomah County, and ran several indigent criminal defense firms in Portland, Oregon, finally earning a post-baccalaureate in accounting from Portland State University in 2005. She's happily married and is the mother of two vivacious little girls. In creating Moxie Accounting, she is working to bring balance to the insane timelines of accounting while acknowledging the importance of humor and professional standards. She's a trusted advisor, professional, and business educator, and highly sought after CPA. Welcome to the show, Katie. Thanks for being here.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
So let's start at the beginning. Moxie Accounting, and it says this right on your website, which I love, is a women-run firm with the moxie to manage any accounting circumstance with precision and tenacity. Your motto is conservative, which I'm sure other accountants love, consistent and defensible. Tell us what prompted you to start Moxie Accounting and sort of give us a snapshot of your firm in terms of size, client base, and services.
Great. My firm is real small. I've kept it small for a lot of different reasons. I have one other staff CPA, two bookkeepers, and then I have sort of an ad hoc on-call bookkeeper as needed. I work with clients that are small business, no one over about $6-7 million. And my practice currently is about 50-50 cannabis versus traditional accounting, traditional business services. So, the whole reason behind Moxie was to try to get off of the rat race that accountants face with this terrible work-life balance. I've been somewhat successful in that. I get to choose my clients. I'm trying to niche into a very complicated and specific industry that not many CPAs are into, cannabis. And since I've been doing that in Oregon since 2012, leading up to the legalization in 2015, I have a long standing history with that population and with the other service providers in town. So I have an ability to manage kind of the craziness of tax deadlines in that way.
Mm-hmm. So before we go further, I have to ask you, how did you go from electrical contracting and owning a business around that to accounting?
I was doing accounting in my electrical contracting business. I have had an interesting thematic theme of accounting in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it started way back in the early, mid-90s when I was a bartender. And one of my recurring clients came in and said, I am a partner in a construction company and I don't trust my business partner. And I need somebody to come in and do the bookkeeping. And I said, well, I'm not qualified. And he said, what is it going to take to get you qualified because I trust you?
Wow.
I said, I need to be sent to a QuickBooks class, I think, or something. And he did that. He said, you can keep your bartending gig and you can come in 3 days a week and do this work. And I came in, he sent me to a weekend at the time. QuickBooks did a 3-day sort of boot camp intensive. They may still do it. And I went to that and I just understood it. Something clicked. I kind of loved the fact that things went to zero.
Yeah.
Things balanced. Oh my gosh. And something clicked and I came in and I started rearranging QuickBooks and that they had been doing and reconciling bank accounts and asking the firm's CPA lots and lots of questions. And it came to, I came to find out that the one business partner was in fact stealing money from the other business partner. And about the same time that I found that out, the only profitable part of that construction company was the electrician. And he came to me and said, I got to leave this business. I don't know how to do all the things you're doing. I would go into business with you and I'll do the electrical side and run the guys if you'll do the accounting side and deal with the business.
Wow.
And at 26 years old, I just said, well, what the heck? And I did. And I met my husband through that process. And then, interestingly enough, I found, very early on, right before, you know, the 99, excuse me, that he had a side deal going and was trying to steal money from me.
Wow.
So I had an interesting accounting fraud kind of relationship start happening. Went into doing bookkeeping for indigent criminal defense folks a number of years later, again, bookkeeping for the firms, and I worked doing, you know, bookkeeping as well, and managing a drug court, you know, basically the grants and the like, until that judge actually misappropriated federal funds and wanted me to hide it for her, and I got fired over that, and I ended up taking her to court. So I've had this interesting.
Wow.
I really feel like CPAs, people who go into CPA and accounting work are heroes. We're people that wear little invisible capes, and we are often people that think that are conservative because we like to follow rules in some ways, but we also want to do the right thing. And I'm not sure every CPA has a situation that they meet square on in the process of either their practice or getting their license where they have to make an ethical decision and it's going to impact the rest of their life.
Mm.
But I've had like three or four of those, and it's one of the reasons I work in cannabis is I feel like my ethics are strong and my resolve is powerful, and mm-hmm. I can steer people, clients and other CPAs when I do education work, down a road that looks fraught with peril, but if you apply ethic and integrity to the situation, you're going to have an outcome that's positive. And so, you know, it looks like I've been jumping through different lily pads through my professional career, but when I look back at all of the jobs or many of the jobs I've had, even in bartending and the like, I was doing management. I was counting cash. I was making money for and stealing things. Like, accounting has always been there as something I've been able to both rely on, and it has proved my integrity in a lot of ways. It's given me those challenges that I think have made me a better person.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I feel like we could spend a whole hour talking about your career and how, you know, and all of the different moving parts. I think that's really fascinating. And it also makes sense in terms of your trajectory. And I think it also is a good segue into this piece about cannabis where, you know, on your LinkedIn profile, I love this. You call yourself an accounting badass, which, you know, is great. And you're saying that you're leading the charge to debunk unhelpful accounting advice within the cannabis industry. You know, talking about integrity and talking about ethics, like what is some of the unhelpful accounting advice you've heard from your clients or from other CPAs that just like sort of makes you cringe, you know, and the other piece of that question is, you know, how do you address that?
Well, I think, yeah, that's a really big question. but I think one of the problems with the cannabis industry, many problems, one of the problems with the cannabis industry is that, and accounting specifically, its relationship to accounting, is that accountants are conservative in nature, and we look for both legal precedent or internal revenue code or, you know, the bright line to give us the roadmap in this day and age. In the past, I believe accountants used a lot more of the brain matter and were really asked to be trusted advisors in people's businesses and were we're thinking outside of the box. Tax preparation and the harried rush to meet deadlines makes us a commodity more than a luxury item in a lot of ways. Cannabis is interesting in that population's relationship to accounting has been almost zero. So I feel like I've been able to sort of blaze my own trail in that regard by being able to say, okay, if I learn about your industry, I really want you to learn about mine. And by saying that to these folks, I've had to take an unintentional advocacy position of being able to advocate for cannabis because I know about it, though I do not use the product. And I've also had to be able to be a much better educator in the thoughtful process of how you apply accounting to an industry that's terrifying. To an industry that has been taught not to keep books and records, not to keep documents, not to account for things. The unhelpful accounting advice all the time is the client walking in and saying, Code Section 280E says I can't make any deductions. Well, how do I get around it? Well, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You manage your business in a way that's thoughtful and respects the law. I think that CPAs that are just looking for the way to get around something are not doing any help to their clients because they're not including the client in the conversation that says, this is a business that you've chosen to be in, and every business has rules, and every business has laws, and these are yours. Mm-hmm. And until they change, this is what you work in. Mm-hmm. I fix a lot of bad accounting. Fraudulent accounting where a CPA or an EA or even a licensed tax preparer is willing to take a tax position that would not stand up under tax law and does not help the industry or their client really going forward. Getting the biggest unhelpful accounting advice that I hear is you can get around 280E by making different structures. Having holding companies, separating your business out so that it's so complicated that no one can really understand what's going on. And I just look at that and think Enron.
Mm-hmm.
LLCs or corporations is something else that I also unwind. When many, many of the attorneys that are involved in these processes are criminal attorneys because that's the only professional that this industry has really had any segue with. They trust their attorney to tell them what to do because their attorney has gotten them out of binds before. Well, your attorney is not a good accountant, sir. being able to find relationships with indigent attorneys, criminal defense attorneys, business attorneys gives the accountant the ability to weigh in real soon and early on in the process. And if somebody's going to make an LLC, that's great. But understanding the tax consequences behind that is not something that your attorney is going to be advising you on, though many do. One of the other things that I often have people tell me is, well, I'm going to get taxed on the amount of money I have at the end of the year, so I need to spend it all. Kind of the concept of getting taxed on your bank account balance instead of net income or gross profit. And that just says to me, I need to educate.
Mm-hmm. So when you have clients come to you and you find out that you have to sort of fix them up because their books are a mess or they're sort of like thinking that they can get away with something. I mean, do the clients know that they've had bad accounting and they're coming to you and saying, Katie, fix this for me? Or are they just sort of, they're looking for a new accountant and then you get in there and you're like, whoa, this is terrible. Let me talk to you about what's going on.
Yes, yes, and yes. in the beginning, so I started this practice. I left my public accounting firm in 2011 to go have a second baby, which I didn't think really worked well with tax season.
Mm-hmm.
And in Oregon at the time, medical cannabis businesses were, dispensaries were being allowed to sort of come into the light of day in preparation for what was the first 2014 push to regulate that Colorado successfully did and Washington did, but Oregon did not. And then in 15, Oregon recreationalized. So in the beginning, I was doing a lot of work translating people from what I call the legacy market or the non-traditional market to the tax market. or traditional market. So basically bringing non-tax dollars or gray market into the light of day. Lots of bad or back tax return amendments, lots of bookkeeping, lots of quantifying things. That has changed as the economy and the businesses that are getting interested in being involved in cannabis are becoming more robust and are more educated themselves. And then, you know, as hemp has moved into play, there's a whole nother segment. But I have a self-created 2-hour initial consultation that every single cannabis and hemp client I potentially engage with goes through in my office. And that is my, you know, accounting badass coming to Jesus conversation. It's me interviewing the client. Instead of those days of free initial consultation and trying to get as many clients as possible, I'm really very cautious about cherry picking my clients. And the conversation it starts really with, what is your origin story? And, you know, hey, I'm not an attorney, but this conversation is going to be the beginning of getting you all the way down the road of being integrated into the regular economy. And I don't expect you to understand or know a ton of that. And I expect you to have had foibles and problems in the back of your history. And I don't expect you to have paid taxes on every single dollar, because that is not what this industry was being asked to do in its early years. But I do expect you to do it now. I expect you to put on the long pants and to accept that if you want to be in this industry and take advantage of it, and you want a CPA to sign their name and take the risk at the bottom line for you, that you and I are going to be clear, that you're going to be honest with me. And the first thing that will get you fired in my practice, carte blanche, point blank, is if you lie to me. So you get a 2-hour opportunity to put everything on the table. I will not judge. I will try to find you every single option possible. And there have only been, you know, I mean, I've probably done 400 initial consultations, and there's probably only been, you know, 5% of those where the situation rose to, I cannot service provide you. I'm going to give you this tax attorney's number, and you're going to need to have a conversation with them, because mm-hmm. you're doing something that's so illegal that I won't bless it. But that's not what not what 99% of the people involved in this industry want. They do business based on integrity, and I think they appreciate that. I expect them to do that as well.
And do you charge for those sessions?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's valuable. I have 500 hours into researching my tax position and getting good with, you know, being able to answer conservatively mm-hmm. and defensively why I would take a position on a tax return I file with the federal government. The federal government is nothing to be trifled with. And the IRS, even underfunded, is still a very powerful organization. I'm not comfortable knowing why it's there, period. And it's mm-hmm. Very irritating to me when I pick up tax returns that have come in from other, you know, businesses or other CPAs where they take a very cavalier position, because I just think there's no way it would stand up under audit. And I can't imagine that another professional would want to have their pants around their ankles, you know?
So how did you get your first cannabis client? And did you start Moxie Accounting going into traditional services, and then you started picking up cannabis clients, or how did that work exactly?
I started something called PDX Bookkeeping, okay. which is still the legal business name that I operate under, and Moxie Accounting is my DBA. Just started a bookkeeping firm, again, because I left a public accounting firm and what I had at the end of 2011, and what I had identified into, you know, was that there were quite a number of CPAs and lawyers that I knew who have real specific accounting needs that weren't doing bookkeeping very properly, but needed bookkeepers that had understanding of tax and accounting to do the work. And so I left, and my first year in 2013, I did only bookkeeping. The only tax return I filed that year was mine. And I did bookkeeping for lawyers, and I did bookkeeping for some other CPAs I knew, because I wanted to go have this baby. And I didn't want to have a crazy schedule. And so I met my first client, cannabis client, because I know probably 20 indigent criminal defense attorneys and criminal defense attorneys in Portland, Oregon. And one of the criminal defense attorneys called me up and said, hey, you do bookkeeping. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, hey, I have this cannabis client. Nobody will work with them. Would you be interested? You seem like you might be willing to take, you know, take a chance on that. And I said, you know, sure, let me have a conversation with them. And, you know, Liz, I go back to that moment often because people ask me my origin story. And I think if I wouldn't have been pregnant, I might not have done it because I just think I was a little bit crazy. I credit my second daughter to just even putting me into this whole industry in some ways. And I met with this guy and he seemed like a nice guy. I mean, these are nice people. They're yeah. criminals because the federal government doesn't like weed, not because necessarily I don't do this work for heroin dealers. I mean, I don't do this work for fentanyl people. Opioids are legal and I don't work for pharmaceutical companies. I mean, I have ethics that are interestingly not interested in that side of the equation. But he was a genuine, decent guy, had a couple kids, just needed help. So mm-hmm. I ended up doing this bookkeeping for him in 2012 and getting him caught up through 13. And here comes tax season. And I said, well, who do I send this to do the tax return? And he said, tax return. And I said, yeah, you can file a tax return. And he said, well, nobody does my tax return. And I said, oh, well, I guess I could do it. And that is literally how I started doing this work.
I love that.
I did that tax return wrong. I did not interpret 280E properly. When I had a colleague review it and he was like, wow, you're really not letting him take a lot of deductions. And I said, yeah, well, there's this code section. And he said, well, I think that code section's, you know, kind of not for this industry. And I was like, oh, I think it is. And I talked to a different colleague and he said, you know, what are you talking about? And then I realized no one knew. And then I looked at it again and I thought about it more and I did more research into the cost accounting methodologies and sort of the managerial side of accounting and I went, oh my God, I did this tax return wrong. And I called the clients and said, I called the Board of Accountancy, actually. I was the first CPA to overtly call the Board of Accountancy in 2012 and say, I want to work with this population. What's your position? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we don't have one. And I said, well, but don't take my license. I just got it.
Wow.
And they said, well, call your state society. And I called the state society and they said, well, we'll call the AICPA. And I said, okay, I'm a member of all these organizations. And the AICPA basically said, be of good moral character. And I said, well, I think I have to be that as an accountant anyway. I said, be of good moral character to me says be the person willing to be the hard ass.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Hold the boundary. And so I called this client back and I said, I filed your tax return wrong. I have amended your tax return. I will file it for free. I will do the next tax return for free in this correct methodology. And this is what the Board of Accountancy told me I needed to do in order to make it right. And he said, I'm not amending my tax return. It was really good for me to not have to pay taxes this year. And I freaked out and lost sleep over it and called the board back and they said, well, you have to disengage with this client and you have to do this series of things, all of which I did. And it made me learn. Learned me good. I have to know these clients better. I have to know this tax law. Before I took on another client, I sat down and researched what my position was at the time and went and talked to an ethics attorney and went to talk to a business attorney and all those sorts of things and got real clear real fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I do professional. I'm moving into doing professional education now because this industry is really growing and I feel like CPAs need a CPA to talk how to be able to sort of traverse those landmines.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I appreciate you sharing that story because it's so important. I mean, to say like, I did your tax return wrong. I didn't know how to apply 280E properly. I mean, that takes a big person to say that, you know,
and
yeah, Oh yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you know, it's so risky to like put your name on that and then find out, oh, it's done wrong. And you went and you followed up and you did the research and you talked to the AICPA and the state board and, you know, and went back to your client. And also, so to me, that sounds like you really have to like know your ethics and where you stand and know where you're going to draw the line in the sand so you're not pushed around by what your client wants.
I just disengaged actually 2 days or 3 days ago. I just disengaged with a $23,000 client because they wouldn't do what I needed to have happen to separate out hemp and cannabis. And they were clearly laundering about $250,000 of prior untaxed money into their business by air quote, paying out of pocket for a building that they were building. And had I not driven to Southern Oregon, got on site on their property and said, hey, what's that building over there? I don't see it on the books.
Wow.
I would have never known. And so, you know, there are very non-traditional things that CPAs in this industry, I feel, need to do. We need to be very much in the presence of our clients. We cannot remote to our clients. If you are going to take the risk of dealing with these people, you need to charge them appropriately. They need to be able to answer these kind of questions. And if they haven't filed tax returns or they've filed personal returns that have $20,000 or $30,000 on them for the last 4 years and all of a sudden they've got $300,000 to be able to put into a building, you've got to be the person that stands up and says, where'd you get that money?
Mm-hmm.
Show me where your dad gave you the loan. Show me where you took that from a bank. Show me how you mortgaged a property. Because I don't believe that money has been taxed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very difficult conversation, and it's sometimes it loses you a very expensive client, but I would rather give the $20,000. I'd rather not have the $20,000 than either go to jail and not see my kids or be accused of something that's going to risk my entire professional license and my practice. Your weed is not worth my job.
So can you just give us an overview of what types of clients you work with? Are you across the board in the industry, you know, growers, producers, retailers? Can you just give us sort of a snapshot of who your clients are?
I have worked with all of those industries. The majority of the clients I work with currently end up are farmers manufacturing edibles, tinctures, extraction, and the like. Dispensaries don't like my tax position. Dispensaries have the highest amount of non-deductible expense because Code Section 280E is trying to tax you out of the business of selling cannabis. So in Oregon, at least, the business of selling cannabis is pretty much exclusively to the population, to the retail population, is pretty much exclusively trapped inside of a dispensary. So dispensaries, you know, their number one highest cost is the purchase of their product. But their second highest cost, both from cash and from a tax standpoint, is payroll. And when you can't deduct 95% of the payroll you pay, you have a huge tax consequence and burden that comes with that. And so I have to do a lot of education about not having too many budtenders, not having, if you are rolling joints in-house or you're doing some sort of piece of packaging in-house, being able to differentiate the time making inventory versus the time selling inventory. But, you know, there's lots of shenanigans that CPAs and, or not CPAs, EAs and tax preparers are normally the people I'm seeing do this work because CPAs are not doing the work. It is not that EAs and tax preparers are inherently people who will take a bad tax position. That is not true. There are wildly capable people that just didn't get a CPA license. CPA license doesn't mean we know more or better. It means that we took 4 tests and we can audit. But, you know, the EAs and the tax preparers have been more willing to deal with the population from a tax standpoint, and so I see them doing more work. But the people that will take a position that says, you know, you can deduct this payroll are not helping. because that is clearly a selling, general, or administrative expense. There is no way around it, as far as my
So, I mean, how are you keeping up with all of the changing regulations? Are you working specifically with Oregon clients, or are you all over the country?
I only work with Oregon clients right now because that compliance piece is so complicated. I am expanding from the standpoint that I want to expand into professional education
right
for other states. I am putting together the conceptual roadmap of how CPAs in their own state look at these clients, because these clients can't transact outside of the borders of their own state if they're dealing in THC. Code Section 280E does not allow for interstate trafficking. You can't sell outside of the border of your state. So I don't have to, if one of my clients selling has income that's come in from California, they're fired. Right then. Done. You are trafficking. If you are dealing with clients that are in prohibition, you really, I think, should be a CPA working in your state's environment, because every state has a different set of compliance regulations that are so patchwork and so complicated. I think CPAs in that state really need the opportunity to be able to dive deep into what they're doing, because the federal position is the same.
Mm-hmm.
The federal position says no. You know, it's the state position that may allow a subtraction to allow that business to go to net income instead of gross profit. My tax position and deals with, you know, the direct and indirect costing into cost of goods sold based on what the state requires you to do to be a business. And so, you know, there are all sorts of ways that I think CPAs in their own state, through their state society, through their board of accountancy, should be receiving professional guidance and education in order to be able to deal with their state's regulations and for their state cannabis population. Mm-hmm. I think that's how you remain safe as a service provider, if you don't spread out all over the country.
Yeah, and I see that some state societies are starting to have conferences in their states, like in New York. The New York State Society is having a conference in November for practitioners to talk about, you know, the industry, sort of, you know, what's going on, how are clients succeeding, you know, as an educational and networking opportunity. So, I think it's slowly starting to happen, but in terms of the educational piece that you want to do, what does that look like? And is it you putting together, you said you're putting together a roadmap, or is that like a document that people can use? What is that looking like?
Well, I just spoke at the Buds, Bottles, and Brews conference in Washington for the joint Washington, Oregon, Alaska, Idaho State Society. Interestingly, I didn't know about the New York one. I will reach out to them. What that is looking like is a series of three introductory webinars that will be hopefully hosted through state societies, is what I'm interested in, that give you the conceptual roadmap of deciding if you even want to work with the client and what the pitfalls are. So, you know, a risk assessment, a high level sort of conceptual idea of you, your client, and the industry in general. A more detailed risk assessment profile that I just did that will have some work papers that go with it. I'm going to outline my initial 2-hour consultation, because it has a step up series of things that I discuss and ways and questions that I ask to be able to support that risk assessment analysis CPAs need to be able to do to decide if they even want to get involved with the client. And then a deep dive into how to look into cost of goods sold for conceptually. How do you take your state's laws, either medical or recreational, and apply them to a tax, to bookkeeping? And then one step further, how do you take that bookkeeping and how do you apply 280E when you go to the tax return side? And where some pitfalls might be in that and whatever. So that's the roadmap thus far that I'm trying to put together, either with, webinars that a state society would help me host or deal with, or eventually, I mean, I may do that through a professional education group or on my own website, but it's just me over here. I'm still trying to do tax deadlines for 2015. Yeah. You know, it's hard to have a working firm and then try to push out a whole other side of even though this education is so important, push out something that's thoughtful and allows CPAs to rely on it, because I can't just link a whole bunch of Internal Revenue Code sections and say, hey, go to town. Like, I'm trying to teach a thought concept. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching, it's almost impossible to teach professional skepticism. So mm-hmm. if you're not already professionally skeptical, which CPAs are supposed to be, but that doesn't mean anything, it's hard to teach that. And so, trying to identify kind of the 65,000 foot above the ground view of what could be a pitfall or a landmine is hard for me, since I've been doing this for so long in the detail. You know, I'm trying to step back and see it as someone who might not know what they're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a campaign. You know, you're getting out there with your thought leadership around this, which I think the cannabis industry, especially in accounting, could really use some leadership around this. You know, and I think it's starting to happen, but you know, in the trade pubs, it would be great to get more voices like yours, you know, really to talk about your experience and what you're seeing people do wrong. You know, I mean, and I know, I mean, I talk to a lot of CPAs and I have since for a long time, you know, and I've talked to some in cannabis who don't want to help other CPAs. They don't want to share their trade secrets. They don't want to share what they've learned, you know, and I think that is too bad, you know. So
I think it's unconscionable. I think it's professional negligence that you would not have a water cooler discussion with anyone that is willing to do this right. There's so much bad accounting being done that if CPAs won't train other CPAs in a high benchmark, how does our acronym have any power? Mm-hmm. How are we trusted business advisors both to each other and to our clients? I have a whole other professional education bend working with the businesses and educating them, because half of the problem I have with getting any CPAs to want to do this work is that these clients are such a hot mess that they don't want to try to deal with bookkeeping, or they don't understand how to be able to take this pile of garbage and make it into something that could be a tax return reasonably. And so I'm trying to get to the point of also educating. I'm not trying. I am educating clients about what it looks like to do basic general bookkeeping, because if you show up respectfully at an accountant's firm and you don't have a set of QuickBooks, but you at least have the documentation that can support them helping you, I think you're more likely to get that CPA interested in doing the work. And then if that CPA has someone like me or other people in their professional societies and environments that are willing to be mentors, how do you think you learned accounting in the first place, you fucks? I mean, that is how we learn accounting, is by being in it and making mistakes and having people better than us, standing on the backs of giants, being willing to teach us something. So I think it's professionally negligent if CPAs are not willing to have a conversation. There's 500 times more work than any of us can do. We need help.
I agreed. I appreciate your passion and this has been great. I can hear it. So last question, you know, and this is sort of related to what we were just talking about. If, you know, what do you say to a CPA who is interested in getting into this space? Like, what's your advice for them?
Research.
Yeah.
My advice is, you know, welcome. Welcome to the most interesting accounting you'll ever do. Mm. And you can't say that about accounting very often. This is interesting, thoughtful, investigatory accounting. Welcome to problem solving like you've never seen. you are going to be asked questions that have problems you've never contemplated. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Start from building your professional network now. You need an ethics attorney. I have my ethics attorney on speed dial. I talk to that guy twice a month about clients. Get ready to have a business attorney. Get ready to be able to create a professional network with other lawyers and be willing to be able to articulate in simple, tiny words what kind of client you want, what kind of work these people need to be able to do in order to have those people pre-vet your people. Be willing to reach out and have a conversation with a larger accounting firm or someone that might look at you like you're crazy to get the answer you need. A lot of times, and especially early on, I would have to translate my questions about cannabis to other partners in my old firm or other partners in downtown firms in Portland that I knew. I couldn't tell them that it was a cannabis client. I would have to translate the problem into something that a traditional business would have to address and find what code sections those people would rely on if they had to defend it. And then I would have to back into, do I think that's the right answer for cannabis? And how do I make it just a little bit more conservative even then? Mm-hmm. And so this industry is built backwards and upside down. And it's going to totally change again when 280E comes off the table, because the rules and regs and the things I rely on for in a prohibition environment for my clients to keep them on the straight and narrow go absolutely out the door once 280E is off the table and big pharma or big ag or big tobacco comes in and starts running the show and snapping up little businesses, which is happening in Oregon already. But being outside of the realm of prohibition, I think, creates a much more dangerous position for CPAs, because all these dudes that were in the traditional or the non-traditional market, that legacy market that are interested in laundering money, those guys are all going to show up. And it looks like they look like a safe client right now because, oh, cannabis isn't illegal anymore. And the CPA thinks, oh, I could just take this client and I'm good, and it's no problem. But that's where there's going to be at least, I don't know, 5-7 years of people laundering their money that they made in the black market. I apologize. Black market is a horrible thing. It's not a black market. It is totally racist to say that. It is an untaxed market. And it's an industry that has been forced into that. These people, for the most part, want to pay their taxes. But I don't think that if for any CPA either listening or interested in it, you get in now while there's prohibition sort of making the walls that these clients can't go outside of, and you get comfortable in that arena, and you're then, when the walls come off and 280E comes off the table, you then at least have some boundaries and some experience and knowledge to be able to see the guy that comes in and has the $250,000 building off the books that they, air quotes, paid out of pocket for. You know, I mean, you have a duration of time and the experience that gives you some knowledge to be able to not take that client on without understanding the risk of helping them launder money. Mm-hmm. That's the charge that the CPA would get. Aiding and abetting a criminal enterprise in filing a return that launders money. And I won't do that.
Well, I hope a lot of CPAs are listening to this, because this is a lot of good stuff, and I feel like you're setting the record straight in a lot of ways. So if you're a CPA out there who is considering getting into this space, please, please, please listen to this a couple times. And, you know, Katie, thank you so much. This has been great to have you on the show. And if you're interested in hearing more about Katie, you can go to her website, moxieaccounting.com. Where else can they find you?
You can find me, Katie, K-A-T-Y-E, at Moxie Accounting. Again, by the end of 2019, I'm going to have some professional education work pushed out, at least through the Oregon State Society and hopefully the Washington State Society. But I'm happy to talk to anyone. I'd like to travel and go to New York. I'd like to come to the States. If your state society, if you're in a CPA in a state that has recreational or even medical, I think contacting your state society and asking them to get professional education for you is fully appropriate and something that needs to happen, because I want to educate and give people the roadmap I have, and I want to get people's influence back when, you know, they see something differently than I do. It has to be a dialogue, or you know, it's tone deaf.
Katie, Max, and Landis, thank you so much for being here. I'm Liz Gold with CPA Trendlines. Until next time, everyone.